Sophistication. It was early evening of a day in the late fall, and the Winesburg County Fair had brought crowds of country people into town. The day had been clear, and the night came on warm and pleasant. On the Trunion Pike, where the road after it left town stretched away between berry fields now covered with dry brown leaves, the dust from passing wagons arose in clouds. Children, curled into little balls, slept on the straw scattered on wagon beds. Their hair was full of dust and their fingers black and sticky. The dust rolled away over the fields, and the departing sun set it ablaze with colors. In the main street of Winesburg, crowds filled the stores and the sidewalks. Night came on. Horses whinnied. The clerks in the stores ran madly about. Children became lost and cried lustily. An American town worked terribly at the task of amusing itself. Pushing his way through the crowds in Main Street, young George Willard concealed himself in the stairway leading to Dr. Reefy's office and looked at the people. With feverish eyes, he watched the faces drifting past under the store lights. Thoughts kept coming into his head, and he did not want to think. He stamped impatiently on the wooden steps and looked sharply about. "Well, is she going to stay with him all day? Have I done all this waiting for nothing?" he muttered. George Willard, the Ohio village boy, was fast growing into manhood, and new thoughts had been coming into his mind. All that day, amid the jam of people at the fair, he had gone about feeling lonely. He was about to leave Winesburg to go away to some city where he hoped to get work on a city newspaper, and he felt grown up. The mood that had taken possession of him was a thing known to men and unknown to boys. He felt old and a little tired. Memories awoke in him. To his mind, his new sense of maturity set him apart, made of him a half-tragic figure. He wanted someone to understand the feeling that had taken possession of him after his mother's death. There is a time in the life of every boy when he, for the first time, takes the backward view of life. Perhaps that is the moment when he crosses the line into manhood. The boy is walking through the street of his town. He is thinking of the future and of the figure he will cut in the world. Ambitions and regrets awake within him. Suddenly, something happens. He stops under a tree and waits as for a voice calling his name. Ghosts of old things creep into his consciousness. Voices outside of himself whisper a message concerning the limitations of life. From being quite sure of himself and his future, he becomes not at all sure. If he be an imaginative boy, a door is torn open, and for the first time he looks out upon the world, seeing as though they marched in procession before him the countless figures of men who, before his time, have come out of nothingness into the world, and again disappeared into nothingness. The sadness of sophistication has come to the boy. With a little gasp, he sees himself as merely a leaf blown by the wind through the streets of his village. He knows that, in spite of all the stout talk of his fellows, he must live and die in uncertainty, a thing blown by the wind, a thing distant like corn to wilt in the sun. He shivers and looks eagerly about. The 18 years he has lived seem but a moment, a breathing space in the long march of humanity. Already he hears death calling. With all his heart he wants to come close to some other human, touch someone with his hands, be touched by the hand of another. If he prefers that the other be a woman, that is because he believes that a woman will be gentle, that she will understand. He wants, most of all, understanding. When the moment of sophistication came to George Willard, his mind turned to Helen White, the Winesburg banker's daughter. Always he had been conscious of the girl growing into womanhood as he grew into manhood. Once on a summer night, when he was 18, he had walked with her on a country road, and in her presence had given way to an impulse to boast, to make himself appear big and significant in her eyes. Now he wanted to see her for another purpose. He wanted to tell her of the new impulses that had come to him. He had tried to make her think of him as a man when he knew nothing of manhood, and now he wanted to be with her and to try to make her feel the change he believed had taken place in his nature. As for Helen White, she also had come to a period of change. What George felt, she, in her young woman's way, felt also. She was no longer a girl and hungered to reach into the grace and beauty of womanhood. She had come home from Cleveland, where she was attending college, to spend a day at the fair. She also had begun to have memories. During the day she sat in the grandstand with a young man, one of the instructors from the college, who was a guest of her mother's. The young man was of a pedantic turn of mind, and she felt at once he would not do for her purpose. At the fair she was glad to be seen in his company, as he was well-dressed and a stranger. She knew that the fact of his presence would create an impression. During the day she was happy, but when night came on she began to grow restless. She wanted to drive the instructor away, to get out of his presence. While they sat together in the grandstand, and while the eyes of former schoolmates were upon them, she paid so much attention to her escort that he grew interested. "A scholar needs money. I should marry a woman with money," he mused. Helen White was thinking of George Willard, even as he wandered gloomily through the crowds thinking of her. She remembered the summer evening when they had walked together and wanted to walk with him again. She thought that the months she had spent in the city, the going to theatres and the seeing of great crowds wandering in lighted thoroughfares, had changed her profoundly. She wanted him to feel and be conscious of the change in her nature. The summer evening together that had left its mark on the memory of both the young man and woman had, when looked at quite sensibly, been rather stupidly spent. They had walked out of town along a country road. Then they had stopped by a fence near a field of young corn, and George had taken off his coat and let it hang on his arm. "Well, I've stayed here in Winesburg. Yes, I've not yet gone away, but I'm growing up," he had said. "I've been reading books, and I've been thinking. I'm going to try to amount to something in life." "Well," he explained, "that isn't the point. Perhaps I'd better quit talking." The confused boy put his hand on the girl's arm. His voice trembled. The two started to walk back along the road toward town. In his desperation, George boasted. "I'm going to be a big man, the biggest that ever lived here in Winesburg," he declared. "I want you to do something. I don't know what. Perhaps it is none of my business. I want you to try to be different from other women. You see the point. It's none of my business, I tell you. I want you to be a beautiful woman. You see what I want." The boy's voice failed, and in silence the two came back into town and went along the street to Helen White's house. At the gate he tried to say something impressive. Speeches he had thought out came into his head, but they seemed utterly pointless. I used to think, had it in my mind, you would marry Seth Richmond. Now I know you won't," was all he could find to say as she went through the gate and toward the door of her house. On the warm fall evening, as he stood in the stairway and looked at the crowd drifting through Main Street, George thought of the talk beside the field of young corn and was ashamed of the figure he had made of himself. In the street the people surged up and down like cattle confined in a pen. Buggies and wagons almost filled the narrow thoroughfare. A band played, and small boys raced along the sidewalk, diving between the legs of men. Young men with shining red faces walked awkwardly about with girls on their arms. In a room above one of the stores, where a dance was to be held, the fiddlers tuned their instruments. The broken sounds floated down through an open window and out across the murmur of voices and the loud blare of the horns of the band. The medley of sounds got on young Willard's nerves. Everywhere, on all sides, the sense of crowding, moving life closed in about him. He wanted to run away by himself and think. "If she wants to stay with that fellow, she may. Why should I care? What difference does it make to me?" He growled and went along Main Street and through Hearn's grocery into a side street. George felt so utterly lonely and dejected that he wanted to weep, but pride made him walk rapidly along, swinging his arms.